Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We are going to turn the page and consider what Yahweh had to say. The world's in a mess. We don't try to depress our listeners by revealing the truth about the problems associated with religion, politics, militarism, the media, but simply to educate, impugn the myths that have become so popular, so that those who listen to the program and those that whom they love can free themselves, can extricate themselves from being dependent, being abused by these various institutions, because the consequence is so significant. And that by us revealing the consequence of militarism and of economic schemes and of politics and religion, then there are more and more people who will be open to listening to what Yahweh has to say. And that's why in the second hour... Yes.
Can I throw something in here? Sure. Something just before we get started I want to throw out, because uh-huh. I've heard this verse used many, many, many times, taken out of context. Mm-hmm. And I want people to actually hear the context of this verse, so the next time they hear somebody take it out of context, they'll understand exactly what it's talking about. And it's a verse that's used often that I've heard on several radio shows, taken completely out of context.
Okay.
And it's Hosea 4:6.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because you have rejected knowledge. I also will reject you from being priests for me, because you have forgotten the Torah of your God. I will also forget your children. That's the knowledge that Yahweh is talking about. So the next time you hear that, and you hear somebody take it out of context to make it sound like there's some knowledge they're sharing with you that has nothing at all to do with the Torah, is going to save you, well, you know, just put it all in context.
Yeah, there are two parts of, maybe three parts of that statement, Larry, that are life-altering. One of the most important revelations in the whole of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Context, of course, is essential. So let's begin with context. You can't even put it in context by quoting the whole verse. You need to put it in context of why was Yahweh speaking to a man named Salvation, and why was what was the specific message that Yahweh was conveying? What were the conditions like in the community that he was conveying this message to? What overall was God communicating? It's, I think, absolutely fascinating, because the conditions that existed in Yisrael at the time of Hosea were almost identical to what we experience in America and in Europe today. They were that the politics and religion had become one, and that the agenda was universally opposed to God. That the rhetoric of the people, the imagery of the people, the agenda of the people, the undertakings of the people, the religions, the politics, everything was wholly opposed to what God was teaching. You know, he lays out his teaching in his Torah, and Torah does mean teaching. It's guidance, not law. He lays that out, and what they were doing was universally opposed to it. And so God spoke to Hosea and said, what I want you to do is I want you to go to one of these pagan religious temples down the street here. And I want you to go in with the temple prostitutes, because sex obviously sells. That's why the temples had prostitutes. You know, why not go to church today if we can get laid? Well,
time to go to church.
It's time to go to church. I'm going to do my thing for God. And he said, I want you to marry the temple prostitute. Her name is Gomer. I want you to go marry her. And, you know, God crazy, or was there a method to his madness? Now, we've spent a number of days talking about how humanity and our very nature, being an upright creature and having this great joy of coming together as men and women, becoming husband and wife, becoming mother and father, raising children, becomes the greatest, most joyous part of our lives, how that's a model for Yahweh's ultimate goal, his ultimate desire, which is his covenant. What Yahweh was encouraging Hosea to do was for him to actually understand what God felt like based upon man's religious and political proclivities. And he says, if you go off and you marry a temple prostitute, a religious prostitute, then you're going to know what I feel like as it relates to the religious and political, the revolting behavior, the disloyalty of my people. And so I want you not only to be able to communicate, and I'm going to give you the words to share, but there's something about having lived it, having experienced it, that will put some passion into the tone of your voice as you communicate this with my people. So that's the setting of this. And then what Yahweh says is, you are no longer my people. I am divorcing myself of you. And I'm divorcing myself from you because you've become religious. Because you're politicized. Because almost everything you say and do is opposed to what I have shared with you. That's the context of this. And so, if you don't understand the context of Hosea, then you have no way of understanding the specifics of one statement. Now, turning to that specific statement, God is telling the Cohen, those who were Lowy, translated or transliterated Levites today. He was telling them, you know, you're so lost that you're no longer going to serve me in any capacity. And the Lowy existed, as you know, Larry, to serve a specific function. And their functions were twofold. Their functions were to be the hands and feet and mouthpiece during the invitations, during the seven Moed Mikre. To perform, to officiate what was occurring so that the people would have this visual and tangible experience, and therefore, in, you know, what has been throughout history mostly an illiterate society, have the opportunity to visually and, visually experience, to actually experience the teaching and the guidance and the symbolism that's associated with each of these invitations to meet with God. And so, the Lowy were specifically authorized to officiate at these festival feasts, these parties. That was half of their business, half of their purpose. The other half of their purpose, I should say there are actually three purposes. The second was they were to adjudicate. You know, you have to, there are always, people are going to have disputes, and somebody has to adjudicate. Somebody has to act as a judge to resolve disputes between people. And Yahweh said, so long as your sole source of adjudication is my Torah teaching, then I'm going to authorize you to be the judges. And the third thing is, the Lowy were specifically asked to keep the Torah and the Ark of the Covenant and its mercy seat inseparable, so that the Torah teaching of Yahweh, his guidance, and his mercy seat, his Ark of the Covenant, were never separated. Those were their three missions. And God is telling them, you know, because you have become religious, because you have not listened to my guidance, because you have become such that you're enriching yourselves. Because it's interesting, to prevent a hierarchy and a religious institution, Yahweh told the Lowy, you cannot own land, and you cannot accumulate wealth, and no one can pay you money. You're going to subsist on the leftovers of the sacrifices that are brought so that the family gets the majority of the meat. You're going to have some of the leftovers. That'll be your meat.
You can't play Pat Robertson or Billy Graham or anything.
No, you can't. No money. And you can have people can bring some wood so you can build shelter, and they can bring wool so you can make clothes. But you are you're going to live based upon relying on me. Period. No monetary or political power base. And so they had neglected that too. They had vied for political and religious power and authority. And so they created this infighting between those who were born into the priestly family, the Lowy, and rabbis, which means exalted ones, who wanted to vie for power based upon their own intellect and craftiness as opposed to which tribe they were born into. And so God is saying, you know, you're no longer going to represent me. And so the representative of Yahweh at the festival feast, at these seven invitations to meet with God, rather than being the Lowy, was now God himself. Yahusha would represent Yahweh. He himself would say, you know, I can't rely on men because they're so corrupt. I'm going to do this myself. I'm going to officiate myself. And he even gave the timeline for which he was going to do this. Now, the other aspect of it, so there's three things in that particular statement. One of those is that, and we were talking about this during the break, is that a religious individual is completely allergic to evidence and reason. There's a show that precedes mine on GCN, and the host advocates Protestant Christianity. And while my comment was you know, we wouldn't agree on anything, the reality is she wouldn't even be able to process anything that we're talking about here. Because the religious mindset is completely opposed to evidence and reason. They're even opposed to God's own testimony. And that nothing you say to them resonates with them. And so, speaking to that kind of a community, God is saying that your lack of knowledge and understanding is deadly. The opening part of the statement that you just shared, Hosea, he saves, 4:6, is in of itself one of the most profound statements that you will ever find anywhere in any written material. Yahweh says, my people, it's Am. Am can be people or family, but my people are completely destroyed and they will perish. This is Dhamma. They are cut off and will cease to exist. It was written in the Niffle Perfect, telling us that the people have actively participated in their own and absolute demise because of men from a lack of understanding, belay, corrupted information, inadequate knowledge, and deficient discernment, the inability to exercise good judgment. Understanding, Larry, is based upon two things. You have to have knowledge, and knowledge is acquired through observation, through listening, or through observation, close examination. So you have to have knowledge, and the knowledge you have has to be of things that are, or the evidence has to be reliable. Or at least you have to have the ability to determine what evidence is reliable and what is not. You know, for example, if you're getting your testimony from one of Paul's 13 epistles, half of the Christian New Testament, you're in serious trouble. That is the plague of death. If you're getting your information from Yahweh's Torah, from his prophets, then that information is reliable. But it begins, understanding always begins with knowledge. Without knowledge, there is no understanding. But a lot of people know and don't understand. It's the definition of a scholar. A scholar knows many things and understands almost nothing. Understanding requires making connections. It's the ability to exercise good judgment so that you can relate things together. You can see the patterns in things. You can see the relationships between things. And it's this very discussion we're having, which I'm glad you brought it up, Larry, is one that is so essential for people to appreciate that the absolute essence of understanding requires us to know, for example, the context of a discussion. Unless you understand who God was talking to, the conditions that existed at the time, what God was troubled by in terms of this religious and politicized community that's very similar to the United States today, and why he was having his spokesperson, his prophet, go off and marry a temple prostitute so that he would understand this. Unless you view it in context, you have no chance of understanding it. And just the context of bringing in God's statement relative to the Torah is essential to go from knowing to understanding. So in this particular case, it's God did not use the common Hebrew word for to know. So it is understanding that he's concerned about. Belay is speaks of understanding. Of it, yada is the Hebrew word for to know. And so what God is telling you here, all who will listen, that faith won't save you. You know, faith is what you cling to when you do not know. Belief is for those who do not understand. Those who do not understand choose to believe. Those who do not know have faith. So this is a direct condemnation of the basis of religion. Religion and faith have become identical.
Well, I mean, this is what he just rips all through Hosea. Is all the religious symbolism, the temples, go marry the temple prostitute, name your kid, you have been forgotten, or whatever.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean,
right. So God is saying here that faith isn't going to work for you. That you will be destroyed. You're going to cease to exist as a direct result of your lack of understanding. If you don't devote the time to listen to Yahweh and to observe what he has to say in his Torah, then you have no chance of understanding what he's offering or knowing who he is. And therefore, you're going to die. You're going to cease to exist. And in the religious community, they are especially immune, allergic to evidence. You can present God's own testimony to a religious individual, and they are immune to it. In fact, they will actually demean.
I've done it 1,000 times. I'm sure you have, too. I've even had them ask, what is this trash? What is this trash?
Right. And so God is telling you, warning you up front, that your ignorance, your lack of understanding, your choice of faith over knowing is to your own demise. That if you do not know and understand, you are not in a position to make a moral or wise or beneficial choice, and it's going to end in your death. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. This is an extraordinarily important statement. God is speaking to the chosen people, the people that he chose to establish the covenant with initially. He says, my people are completely destroyed and will perish because of a lack of understanding. But that speaks to all of us today because we're all God's creation. So the people that God has created are universally destroyed and they will perish because of a lack of understanding. Larry, as you know, the consequence of not focusing on what God is offering, of not paying attention to who he is, not coming to know him as he is, as Yahweh, and not coming to understand his terms and conditions of his covenant so that we can respond to them, is that we die. God doesn't say here, my people are sent off to hell where I'm going to supervise their eternal torment because of lack of understanding, does he? No. Dama means to be cut off and ceasing to exist. Eternal torment and hell and ceasing to exist are opposites. You can't have eternal torment and cease to exist at the same time. They're opposites. And that's one of the things that is so troublesome about the religions of Christianity and Islam, particular Christianity, is this notion that all souls go to either heaven or hell. Well, ceasing to exist is the condition that most people end up choosing, really, because they chose to be ignorant and irrational. And that is as a place that can be neither heaven nor hell. And every time that Yahweh talks about a consequence of not getting to know him and not responding to the terms and conditions of his covenant, virtually every time that he speaks about this, he says that the consequence is that you'll cease to exist. It means you're not going to hell. It's just that the end of your mortal life will be the end of your existence. Your soul, your consciousness, will simply cease to exist. Now, that's not a favorable thing, but it's not a punishment. But it is why, in the beginning of this program, I said that all of those who believe the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, all who are devoted to the church, all who would identify themselves as being Christian, will die. You don't understand who Yahweh is. You don't understand his covenant. You aren't in a position to capitalize on them, and your lack of understanding, which you've replaced by faith, will be at your demise. You're simply going
to die. You've replaced his plan with one of man's making, and you've decided to accept the pagan notions of faith over trust and reliance.
Right.
You've replaced the upright pillar with a pagan cross.
Right.
You've replaced Yahweh's nature with Lord.
Right.
This laughable religious deity that apparently enjoys torturing people in hell and so forth.
Yes.
Yeah, you've traded all the truth in for a counterfeit, and you've traded in what? You've traded in relationship for religion.
Yeah, but keep in mind that the trade is made by most. God was speaking uniformly to the people in Israel at the time.
Yeah, he's made by billions of people.
Right, speaking uniformly to Americans and to Europeans and to people around the world today. It's the vast preponderance of people choose to believe the lie. Now, the next statement that Yahweh makes is equally important. He said, because you have totally avoided and rejected knowledge and understanding, so then I will consistently reject and avoid you from serving as my ministers on my behalf. Or you can say that the last part could be to approach me. So this is the quid pro quo. God is eminently fair. If you choose to prioritize getting to know him, he will come to know you. If you prioritize coming to understand the covenant relationship that he's offering, he will offer it to you. If you choose to view him as an important part of your life and you choose to listen to his Torah guidance, then he will listen to you and care for you as if you were his son or daughter.
And in that statement, he specifically says Torah, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, he gets to that. He's not there yet, but it's all one statement, and he's going to get to that. At this point, he's just saying that if you are unaware and ignorant, you do not understand who I am and what I'm offering, you're going to die, and you're not going to work with me. So this Pope that claims to be Christ's vicar on earth, according to this, he's not associated with God. God says, no, you're not working with me. You're only working with God if you understand who he is and what he's offering. If you don't, you're not. So all those Christian ministers or radio personalities out there that are claiming to speak for God, no, they're not. God says, no, you're not going to work for me. Unless you understand who I am and what I'm offering, You're not working for me. And there is where the realization that this next statement is so essential. Since you have continuously ignored the Torah of your God, I will also consistently ignore your children. God is now defining the source of understanding, the source of knowledge that they have rejected and that they have ignored. It's the Torah. So, in Christianity, the Torah is considered the bad option, the obsolete option, the thing that's been replaced, the thing that enslaves, the thing that cannot save, the thing that's been torn asunder by the gospel of grace.
Yeah, they've essentially done the same thing the rabbis did. The
right.
Rabbis couldn't find Yosha in the Torah. They saw no mercy there because
right.
they had to set themselves up as the people
right.
to decide what's right and wrong. And then the
yeah.
Christians just decided.
And they could find no role for
the
themselves in the Torah.
Correct.
Yeah, the rabbis could find no role for themselves, no power for themselves in the Torah. So they turned to their Talmud, which are rabbinical arguments that typically against God's teaching. And so what God is saying here, as clearly as words allow, is that if you reject or you're ignorant of or you do not understand his Torah, then you're going to die and that you have no relationship with him. You cannot serve with him, work with him, and that your children are going to die as a consequence. Those are the 1, 2, 3 of it. If you do not understand the Torah, if you're ignorant of the Torah, if you reject the Torah, A, you're going to die. Pure and simple. No gray area here. If you're ignorant of the Torah, if you don't understand the Torah, if you reject the Torah, as do all Christians, as do all Muslims, you're going to die. Second, anyone who claims that they are representing God, that they're doing God's work, who does not define everything that they say, everything that they do and say as it is taught in the Torah, then they're lying. They're hypocrites.
Yeah, and how does that bode for the people that think that there are little aborted babies all over going to heaven?
Not very well.
I think that statement right. pretty well takes that. I don't think you find too many in the family out getting abortions.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
and I just think that the vast preponderance of babies are lost. They're dead.
Right. Yeah, God is saying the source of knowledge, the source of understanding is his Torah. And if you reject his Torah, if you're unaware of his Torah, if you don't understand his Torah, you're going to die. You're going to have no association with him, and your children are going to die. Now, why does he say your children are going to die? Why do you suppose that, you know, what do the children do that puts them in this position, or does it have nothing to do with what the children
do? Parents.
That's
they follow the parent.
The parents pollute their own children.
Yeah, you've got entire societies that are absolutely 100% hopeless when it comes to finding the Torah. They're so far gone. At this point,
God is not saying that the children did anything wrong here. He's saying that their parents killed their children.
Yep.
By parents sending their children to a Roman Catholic church or to a Protestant church or to an Islamic mosque or to a secular humanist school without the proper guidance, that they killed them. Because they did not do the most important job a parent can do, which is to share Yahweh's Torah teaching with their sons and daughters. Because they did not do that, and instead directed them away from God towards religion or towards politics, that they killed them.
Or towards whatever. There are societies. I mean, I watched a documentary on these cannibals out in New Guinea, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, there are societies out there that are so upside down, backward, hopeless, no idea of the truth of anything, that, you know, they're just gone. And these were decisions somebody made somewhere along the line. And then somebody agreed to go along with those decisions.
You know, I one of the most heartbreaking experiences of my life was in Hawaii. And on the big island of Hawaii, there's a monument, this temple that was built by a Tahitian, Polynesian, that came to the islands, that the king, you know, were vying for power, you know, amongst the tribes on each island and amongst the various islands. And this one guy came up with this idea that if we intermix religion and kingship, religion and politics, and then we create all of these taboos and rules, that either you surrender to what we're saying, our view of politics and religion, or you die, and we kill every member of your family, then
this
we can probably...
This has been done before, by the way.
Yeah, then we can probably influence people's behavior, and they set up all these rules, both religious and political, to deify the king and to deify the religious spokesperson. And this monument is a place where tens of thousands of Hawaiians were sacrificed, their hearts cut out of their chests.
Lovely.
Yeah, in the name of religion. That was the religion. You look at the religion of the Aztecs, same thing. Tear the heart out of a soul and hold it up as an appeasement to their gods. It's revolting. It's the nature of religion. But what God is saying here, just a parent's lack of appreciation, their rejection of his Torah, is sufficient to kill those that they claim to love, their own children. We'll return to the final segment of Shatteringness after the commercial break. So let me ask you a question, my friend. Is it possible to live, to have a relationship with God, to actually be associated with Him, reject the Torah?
No.
Is there any way to avoid being Torah observant if you're going to have a relationship with God and live in His presence?
No.
Can you understand the Torah without observing the Torah?
No.
So being Torah observant, therefore, is a prerequisite for engaging in a relationship with God.
Yes.
When you talk to Christians and you say that, because I would suppose you would say that being Torah observant is a prerequisite. It's beyond being Torah observant. You've got to observe the Torah, and then you've got to use your mind to make connections so that you understand what God is saying and the purpose of the
Torah.
Right,
and there's so much to it to understand that we'll never understand it all.
No.
Not claiming anyone does. I don't claim I do. But I do know this. I know that the important parts I do understand, and I know what they're there for, and I understand the mercy of the Torah, and that's really what he's aiming at here.
When you look at the word Torah in Hebrew means to teach. So teaching is what leads to understanding. So this notion that to be Torah observant means that you keep all of the rules and laws of the Torah is how a religious person would interpret that. That's not what God is saying at all here, is it?
No.
No, what he's saying is, I'm teaching through my Torah, and unless you are willing to take the time to understand what I'm teaching, you're just not going to live. At the end of your mortal existence, you're going to cease to exist.
And that's exactly what Dode said, isn't it, David?
Dode
he says, it's an understanding of the Torah. It's not running around, you know, tying a bunch of ties and wearing a bunch of zitzits and...
Right.
And,
it's interesting that Dode's most complete presentation of how to observe the Torah is the 119th Psalm. And for those that are interested, if you go to anintrotogod.org and you go to the third of the three volumes on Torah teaching, you'll find the entire 119th Psalm presented there for you. In the order of the Hebrew alphabet, beginning with the Aleph and going through each of the 22 letters, defining the meaning of each letter that comprises the words of the Torah, Dode explains that there are three things that are essential in terms of one's observance of the Torah. And that is to observe and therefore come to know and understand the means that Yahweh has provided to justly resolve disputes. Those are the seven Moed Mikra, these meetings, these invitations to meet with God. He said the next is to know and understand and respond to the terms and conditions of the covenant. There are five terms and conditions of the covenant. And when you know what God is offering and how we are encouraged, invited to respond, then you're in a position to participate in God's family. That's the second. The third is what he calls the choke, which are inscribed prescriptions for living that cut us into this relationship. Dode, in his 176th lyric song to the Torah, never once lists any rule that he or we should do that will make us good with God, righteous in God's eyes. What he does is constantly encourages us to observe the Torah so we know what it says, so that we think about the Torah so we come to understand it, focusing on those three aspects of the Torah. So then we respond to God. And he says, if you do that, you are absolutely guaranteed of living forever in heaven with him. And so, do we not have with Dode, David, this individual who lived a very flawed life, who is telling God in this song to the Torah, I'm coming to heaven and you can't keep me out because I'm carrying the Torah with me.
Yeah. And yeah, so, that's exactly what you have.
And so
this, that's under his, I believe it's under his covenant and his part three. That's, mm-hmm. that's where you get yeah. that at.
Yeah. So if you want to live beyond your mortal life, then you need to observe the Torah. If you wish to engage in a relationship with God, then you need to understand the Torah. If you wish to work with God, to be part of his mission to share this truth with the world, you need to respond to the Torah. That's what God is saying here. And Larry, I want to thank you for citing this particular statement. It was appropriate today. May God bless you all.